You're listening to Trending with Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics. National speaker Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Timory holds a master's degree in biblical theology, and she covers this week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Timory.
We have heard our theme music like four times today, and we're both at the point where if you're watching the videos, we are literally sitting here bobbing in our seats as the music goes along. Hello, everyone. If you are not joining us via Facebook Live, Instagram Live, or YouTube, you can find us at Trending with Timory, where you can see my guest today, Father Tim Grumbach, who's in the studio with me.
Yeah, if you really want to see me, come check it out.
But, yeah.
It's so good to be here. Always is.
So we have a lot planned to discuss today. We're going to be talking about the quick, just a rapid decline in fertility across our nation, kind of a similar theme that we're seeing in a lot of the Western countries. We'll be talking later today about how men have said no to marriage and there's this overemphasis on the workforce. We'll also be talking about Our Lady and how everything Our Lady does, she just gives it away, and what a great message it is for us. And we'll also be talking a really interesting question for all of you: who do you think the happiest wives are? There's a lot of research that's been done, and some people are pretty upset that the New York Times has actually posted about this. So we'll be coming back up on this. Father Tim, the stats over the last couple months, and should I say couple years, from the CDC have really shown that fertility has been declining. We have been for a number of years below the replacement rate per couple. Essentially, we should be seeing that each couple should be having an average of 2.1 babies. You don't get a whole baby, you get 0.1% of a baby in order to replace yourself. And what people are doing right now is they're reproducing at basically a rate of 1.7. So that's pretty far below replacement level. Alas, we'll get into some of the talking points about why Times Magazine thinks this is great, but what are your initial reactions here?
Is that we are building a culture that has forgotten the reason for children and the gift of children, and that there's so many complexities as to the reason why this is plummeting, but that I think it ultimately comes down to an understanding of the children as a gift, in which the parents get to give themselves to one another and then raise a family and raise children that are not just for this world, but for heaven.
I want to hear what people are seeing, because you and I are understanding like there are a lot of complexities behind why this is happening and a lot of misleading information out there right now. However, I find that I do not see a lot of kids anymore. I don't know. Maybe it's a California thing. Maybe we're in the depths of it. But what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are people are, one of the things is people are delaying marriage. And I think there's a certain selfishness working its way into our culture in which children, we're contracepting ourselves away.
Yeah.
Let's get down to it, in honesty. They say that this article points to a lot of complexity as the reasons why the birth rate is down. But that has got to be one of the main reasons is that we're contracepting ourselves out of existence, and maybe not just literally at a practical level, but as a mindset as well, is that I have to have my life figured out. I have to have everything figured out and planned before a child can come into this world.
Or before I even date anymore.
Right. And I understand. I have friends who are, let's be honest, they had hoped to be married much earlier in their life than now. And they don't have this contraceptive mindset, but I think the culture itself is creating a form of masculinity that is perpetually in adolescence and unable to come into a self-sacrificial kind of love in these committed relationships, and that couples are able to get married and be romantic, have intimacy, and not let children be a part of it.
Yeah.
And so they've created their own little worlds without children. And I think that is a major reason why we're looking at the plummeting of birth rates.
Right. 100 years ago, a 17-year-old could sign up to go be in the war, get married before he left, and come back to a child, and defend his country, maybe even die in the process. But today, we are seeing 30-year-olds having a hard time balancing their budget to even take their girlfriend out on a date. That's just where we are at. And I'm sorry if maybe that is what you were experiencing, what you're listening listening to. This is why, especially when I work with college students, you guys are taking ownership of your faith now. Guys, be marriageable. I'm like, you guys, balance your budgets. Be a good man that is marriageable now. And I think the reality is, too, we have to remember, and this is where we're going to get into this a little bit in a second, because Times Magazine put out a piece, and it was interesting because my mom sent this article to me from Time Magazine, and it's their spin on the CDC's report on why fertility is on a decline. And they're saying it's actually a good thing. Don't get too upset. Nothing's really changed. We'll get to that in a second. But both my parents were so upset. I ended up on the phone with them as they were driving the car in the car, and both of them were saying, these people are forgetting this. These people are forgetting that. But here's one piece, and we're going to get into that in a second. But one piece I want to say is that pregnancy is actually healthier and safer the younger you are. The older you are when you have children, the less healthy the child can be, and the less healthy and easy it is on your body. You don't recover as well. The child is more susceptible. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but older eggs for women are not as robust as they can be for the eggs of a woman who, let's say, is 20 years old, 19 year old, and so forth. There's a reason that our body has the ability to produce children much earlier.
Yeah, and the concept of waiting and waiting and waiting for children. What comes to my mind is, you know, I laugh a lot about the movie Idiocracy. I don't know if you've ever seen this one.
I've not seen it, but people keep recommending it to me, and I still haven't seen it.
Yeah. Well, the concept of Idiocracy is that it takes place in the future. A guy who's not too bright, who's a part of the army, you know, volunteers for this, you know, super secret project in which he's cryogenically frozen, so that when he's, you know, woken up in the future, they see kind of the effects it has on his body. And something traumatic happens, like an end of the world kind of thing happens, I think. And he gets lost. They forget about him. And he's woken up, you know, a few hundred years later. I can't remember exactly. But
he's no Captain America.
He's
we'll
no
say
Captain
that.
America, right? Yeah, yeah. He would be considered, you know, pretty low on the intellectual scale at this time. Well, it explains that, you know, during that time that he's asleep, he's cryogenically frozen, is that all the smart, intelligent, successful people are not having children.
No, they're not.
It's, and this is quite offensive, all the rednecks and the idiots are the ones having children like crazy. And so, you know, idiots bear idiots, they claim. Yes, and so the whole world becomes stupid because all the smart people and the successful people have not been having children. Mm-hmm. And so Idiocracy, it's, you know, the whole world, they're trying to water their crops with Gatorade because it has electrolytes. And I think
don't forget the sugar.
the president of the United States is like a, you know, pro wrestler slash like porn star or something like that.
Gosh.
It's just like, and so in some elements, I kind of wonder how far along we already are in the process of Idiocracy, where people are putting off, you know, having children, for the sake of, you know, successful careers right here and now.
Well, and I can say naturally in my own life, not that I was intentionally ever trying not to have a baby, but I didn't get married until after I finished undergraduate school, finished grad school, had worked for a small handful of years. Would I have loved to get married sooner? Yes, that wasn't what God had in store. It wasn't what happened in my story. And so I get it. Some people aren't able to marry earlier, but there are a vast number of people who are intentionally avoiding having children. You know, they're intentionally seeking after higher levels of education and career and delaying childbearing. And here's where the concern is. And this is where my mom was actually getting really upset, because the Times Magazine article was saying, don't worry about the dropping fertility rates. People are still having an average of two babies, but they're not having them until later in life. I'm sorry, but that is a lie. There is no promise that once you are 35, 40, 45 years old, you will still be able to conceive a child. The reality is that so many women are facing infertility crises, and there are stats showing, based on current trends of infertility, that by 2050, it's going to be very, very rare for people to be able to conceive children without medical intervention, both for men and women.
And I've got to wonder if this article written here has anything to do with this this fear of the boogeyman of overpopulation.
Oh, gosh.
and the pseudoscience of population control, which has been plaguing us for decades now, and is finding its way definitely into our popular culture. You just look at the Marvel movies, where the bad guy, the ultimate enemy, Thanos, his desire is to, in the movies at least, is to, you know, snap half of the beings out of creation so that there's more resources for everybody. I won't give a spoiler, but even the new Godzilla movie, you know, humans turn out to be the bad guys because of overpopulation.
It's eugenics then, yeah, ultimately. Yeah, at least in the case with Thanos, at least he's the bad guy.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
at least
they show that
people who are implementing too much population control are the bad guys there. Yeah. That was the one benefit.
Yeah, yeah. And people are like, why doesn't he just snap his fingers and like create more resources? You know?
Oh, who would have thought of that? Good grief. Well, here's what's interesting. I think looking at this, the reality is that you mentioned earlier, Father Tim, that part of the impact on the lowering of fertility rates is that we're contracepting away our future. And that is in you know, there's a difference between sperm and egg never meeting and a new human life not starting. That is morally illicit, not approved by the church. It degrades sexual intimacy. It prevents a full union on a bodily level, but also union of wills for the creation of human life. And even preventing pleasure, especially from the perspective of a man. I mean, just to be very blunt, science shows that a man needs to climax and actually end up releasing into a woman's body in order to experience the full pleasure of sexual intimacy. And so when we're looking at some of the statistics and information out there, the reality is that we've cheapened sex. But let's take it a step further, Father. A lot of these hormonal contraceptives work as abortifacients. I could name to you the top 20 hormonal contraceptives that not only prevent sperm and egg from ever meeting, but actually can kill a new distinct human life that's been created. Whether it's an imbalance in hormone levels, whether it's a thickening of mucuses so that the baby can't implant in the uterus, it's actually even causing tubal pregnancies in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and at a spiritual level, the church has always known this, but especially with the rise of certain sciences concerning artificial contraception, and understanding that this is a purposeful and intended frustration of the designs of sexuality, in which, you know, it's not the same as natural family planning, which takes advantage of an awareness of a woman's body and the natural cycles, and, you know, bears its own crosses for husband and wife together and the way that they live, but also is a responsible form of I'm going to say it, planned parenthood, a responsible form of that, in which a couple can plan this without frustrating the designs that God has built into the human body.
Right. And even with natural family planning that calls for abstinence for periods of time in a marriage, even natural family planning, Pope Paul VI really emphasizes there can essentially be an immorality. You have to have grave reasons to utilize natural family planning. We can create, even within the Catholic world, a contraceptive mindset where we're delaying having children. Well, I want to get this big promotion. I want to do X, Y, and Z in my career first. I want to have the second car. I really want to be able to have this size house first. That's a contraceptive mentality while still respecting your body by not using contraception per se.
Yeah, and I really want to reach out to the couples that are out there listening who may be thinking, I've never heard this before, and am I really damaging my soul because I haven't heard this before? Mm-hmm. Like, well, you're hearing it now. I want to invite you into this experience that, you know, chastity in the Catholic Church has always been less about a no and more about a greater yes to growing in love. And so for those who face the real cross of infertility, for those who are called to a period of abstinence
in marriage,
that it's meant to be a cruciform kind of love that helps you grow in love, helps us all grow in love and experience different ways of showing love and intimacy than the sexual embrace itself. And this is something that's built into our bodies, that God has built into our bodies in order to know the ways that he loves as well. So we want to invite you into that greater yes, rather than it constantly being about this great no that the wider culture tends to, you know, accuse the church of.
Absolutely. And I look at this, that's Father Tim Grumbach, for those who are just joining us. He is a regular guest here on Trending with Timory. And we're talking about this dropping fertility rate. You know, I look at what the CDC is saying, and then I look at the Times magazine that my mom sent over. And the Times magazine keeps saying, don't worry, people are still having babies, they're just having them later. Okay, how are they having them later? With in vitro fertilization and other forms of intervention. Some people are having them later, but the older you are, the more high risk your pregnancy also is. In addition to that, they're saying, oh, don't worry, people are still having two children. You guys, if everyone just has two children, that's still not enough children. From a Catholic perspective, a Catholic worldview, I remember my dear professor, Dr. Michael Barber, always said, the mandate is this: be fruitful and multiply. God doesn't say replace yourself. So he said, I really think, and even a lot of the social sciences show, it's healthiest to actually have three children, because what the children learn amongst each other, and not only the older cares for the younger, but then the oldest who learn to care for another, it really is a responsibility to multiply, not just replace ourselves within the church.
Right. And it was the first commandment that God gave to humanity, was it not?
Yes. Is
be fruitful and multiply. That's built into our humanity. And that we continue to hear about this pseudoscience of overpopulation, that there's not enough resources to handle such multiplication. But the reality is, you know, you can fly over the United States alone and see, look at how much land there is,
you know?
Look how much space there is. And yeah, I know nobody wants to, live in those, the flyover states.
Hey, I'll live in the mountains.
I'm not saying nobody wants to live in the flyover states, but there are parts of that there's, there's not as much happening, and, there's no beach or
you're
whatnot.
So getting yourself in trouble here. You're
right
digging
into a hole.
Deeper. Let's tell everyone how spoiled we are in California.
Yeah. But there, there are some barren parts that we can't just plot people into. I'm not going to name any names anymore.
Those would be awesome views.
Yeah.
Come on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But as far as resources go as well, is the problem is not a lack of resources. The problem is sinful humanity and the control over those lack of that lack of resources.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that we really do have to remember that delaying having children, is not the way to find that authentic Christian lifestyle. I think we have to remember, be fruitful and multiply. We are called, you look at the seven sacraments, and holy orders and matrimony are two of them. They're two vocational lifestyles. So unless you're either becoming a priest and dedicating yourself through religious life, or you're getting married, you're not necessarily living one of those sacramental lifestyles that the church is calling us to. And, I'm seeing a little bit more of a trend. I have a friend who's becoming a doctor, and some others who are having children while they're still finishing school. Is it the easiest? Not necessarily. Is it a little more challenging? But I'm seeing this, a little bit more so in a very Catholic realm, but it's doable. Maybe you slow down your course load. There are different perspectives we have to take, especially as women with our fertility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, pointing back to the idea coming from Idiocracy, that, in that story, that it's all the people who are less successful, the people considered rednecks and whatnot, who are multiplying and filling the country. If we go back to this kind of traditional understanding of the Catholic family, I'm seeing, more and more of these Catholic families pop up in our parishes, where they're like taking up whole pews, and,
yes.
and you see a lot of fruitfulness in that, the married love of husband and wife, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And yes, we continue to acknowledge and walk with those who may be facing infertility and are unable to live in that way, be able to support a family of that size. But we're starting to see these more traditional-minded families filling the pews, and this is going to be the future of the church, is these large, strong families, and we're going to start filling the pews, we're going to start filling the churches, we're going to start filling this country, and we, in some kind of way, may be more victorious in passing forward our tradition because of these families that we're raising.
When other people aren't.
When other people, these fertility rates are plummeting so low that they're not raising a generation of people with their like-minded values.
I think in many ways we're one generation away from changing the culture. Mm-hmm. Although there may be challenging laws and challenging ideologies, one of the greatest responsibilities that Catholics have are to raise good children. And that means that women aren't as involved in the workforce. That means that their greatest work is in the formation of souls. And we're going to get into that a little bit more later on. But I want to make one last comment having to do with the dropping fertility rate. We recently saw that the 2018 statistics from Florida came out on abortion. And it's showing that 70,000 abortions took place in 2018. What they showed essentially is that 3 out of every 4 abortions that took place were for elective reasons. So for whatever reason they chose, oh, it wasn't the right time, financially it didn't make sense, I broke up with my boyfriend, we're having a hard time in our marriage. It was literally less than 1.5% had to do with health, and it was only 0.3, not even a full percentage point, that had to do actually with the danger of the woman. It was less than a percentage point. It was less than 0.1% that it had to do with rape. And so when we're looking at these statistics, I end up pulling up, well, what was the birth rate in Florida? Well, essentially, 1 in 3 babies that are conceived are aborted in Florida. Mm. It's one of the very few states where we actually have mandated reporting for Florida abortions. And so the reality is, a lot of people say, well, people are having less children because they're having more contraception. We're seeing less people are engaging in sex, maybe in the younger years. I don't buy that. I think a lot of people are aborting. We just don't have the numbers. And in addition to that, the later, the RU46 abortion medical pills aren't reported in most of the states, and Florida doesn't report RU486 pills. They're not mandated to report. So my point in being this is, people may say that there are fewer abortions taking place. I don't really buy that. And I think we need to talk about this a heck of a lot more, because there are so many people, as Father Tim said earlier, that they say, I just didn't know this. I've not heard this before. You know now, engage in the conversation.
And along with those low numbers in those procuring abortions for the reasons of rape or incest or, you know, the health of the mother, is that means the numbers go skyrocketing for those who are procuring abortions for the reasons of, as they describe it here, as, you know, social or economic reasons.
Right.
And while so much of the debate around abortion right now is these extreme situations of literally a woman's health or her life being in danger, and rape and incest, they present those as if that's the main reason anybody would want to get an abortion, but the numbers are telling us otherwise.
And if we look nationally at the numbers, it's usually less than 1% overall having to do with, like you said, rape, incest, or the life of the mother. So what I want to talk about here is actually some really interesting good news, because we're talking about, really, in many ways, women's health, women's fertility, but it has to do with marriages. Here's a question I asked earlier. Who are the happiest wives in the nation? Actually, statistically speaking, the happiest wives, and the New York Times got into a lot of trouble for acknowledging this in a opinion piece that was written by a number of people putting together some research here. And it was talking about how religious conservative women are the happiest wives in our nation. Wow. Is it that surprising?
When religion is at the center of a family.
Exactly.
You know, and what I noticed about a lot of the responses about this article, you know, over social media, as presented in the article, is that it almost seemed like there was a kind of sickening envy rising up.
Yes.
Not to discount the hard experiences of the people who posted, the people who responded, who said, well, when I was, you know, evangelical and a wife, I was miserable.
I wasn't happy.
Yeah, but I knew how to put on the face. And so these women must be miserable and must be lying about their happiness, because that's how they get along in life. And to look at someone's happiness and say there's no way that they're possibly actually happy because I wasn't in that situation, it's something to question.
The New York Times also posts a worldview that's a little different. Many of the religious families that are showing a high satisfaction for wives are also people who really fight to make sure that the wife is home with the family. And it's a choice of the women. In fact, polling showed back in 2013 that 2/3 of mothers preferred not to work full time. Some statistics that came out just a few weeks ago that we talked about here on Trending showed, yet again, very similar statistics, that only 1/3 of women wanted to work full-time, and the rest of women actually really wanted to have less than full-time employment, because across the board, either way, women wanted more time with their families. And this is something we're seeing fought for, sacrifices being made, economic sacrifices, in order to have the mother in the home with children.
Yeah, yeah. And we know a lot of sacrifices are made, as some mothers, you know, must go into the workforce, but we're still, you know, I think the church is going to be going back to this this call, this great sacrificial call for mothers to be mothers in the home as much as they possibly can, and for fathers to make those sacrifices as well to provide for his family.
What greater thing to do the work of nourishing a soul, building up the future of humanity? Who will present the greatest ideas that change the world down the road?
Timory will be right back. Send her a tweet at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Father Tim Grumbach is here with me in studio, and we're talking about Dr. Carrie Gress's book, The Anti-Mary Exposed. Now, if you didn't catch the interview a little while back, you can find it on radiotrending.com, where she actually joins me to discuss her book and some key takeaways that we can use for rebuilding women in today's culture against what is also toxic femininity. So, Father Tim, you've also read the book. Let's talk about some of the key areas, for example, beauty in the book and how this relates to Our Lady.
Right. And I found it so intriguing, the concept of an anti-Mary, first of all, is that it's kind of compared to the idea of an anti-Christ. And that if there's, you know, if Christ is going to be the new Adam, then looking at Mary as the new Eve, that, you know, why not speak of the idea of an anti-Mary? Mm-hmm. And so it would take the beauty of Mary, you know, as she is spoken in apparitions to mystics and visionaries, who every single one of them say, she's the most beautiful woman we've ever seen. You know, one even said, you know, you would want to die just to be able to see her again, you know, mm-hmm. and to know that, you know, and then, so they would ask her, where does this beauty come from? And she says, it's because I love. And I love that image of what makes someone beautiful is their willingness to pour themselves out rather than to be obsessed with themselves and to be isolated and to be conceited and to be so obsessed with how one looks, but to know that what makes one beautiful is their ability to give themselves away. There's so many stories that prove this, that true beauty comes from one's ability and willingness to love. I was reading an article about, you know, the fire in Notre Dame in the cathedral, and how the person writing the article and telling his own story was struck by the beauty of a woman that he saw going to confession at the cathedral. He said that, you know, he had seen the place as little more than what it had become, was a temple to the goddess Reason, right? Mm-hmm. Back in the, I think it was the 1800s, 18th century, maybe, mm-hmm. in France, during the Enlightenment, and that he had never expected to walk into that cathedral and see, you know, a woman who was beautiful because she was going to confession. I don't think the author even met this woman or talked to her, but he just said, there was something about her holiness, her desire and striving for holiness that I found beautiful. And so this desire for love and the ability to show love is beauty, isn't it not?
But isn't that one of the gifts of women? St. Edith Stein talks about this, mm-hmm. and Dr. Carrie Gress in the book as well, about how part of the beauty of women is our ability in nourishing others, is to, St. Edith Stein talks about it as nourishing the divine spark within the souls of others.
Right.
And I think that there's a testament to what's happening in our culture as women are becoming interiorly less beautiful and maybe exteriorly more beautiful in a way. Many men are saying, no, thank you. I'm no longer interested in dating or marriage. And it's because the quality of women has really declined in our society, so much so that interior beauty is so lacking.
Right. And I also go back to, we've mentioned this before, is that beautiful part of C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, where this woman comes onto the scene at the very, you know, outskirts of heaven. And, you know, she has all these creatures of heaven and following her and singing songs and dancing. And these, you know, great giant angels are with her. And the narrator looks at this woman and says, is that who I think it is? And, you know, his companion says, oh, no, you don't know her. And, you know, she's just a regular person who loved in simple but extraordinary ways. And so, you know, and it also describes her as, you know, I'm not sure if she's wearing any clothes or if she's clothed by her love. And, you know, C.S. Lewis gives us that beautiful image that, you know, in heaven, we're only clothed by the love that we show, that we will be judged by love, and we will only be wearing, you know, and bringing with us into heaven what it is that we gave away. Mm-hmm. And so the true beauty of Mary is what she gave away and the ways that she loves.
You're listening to Trending with Timory. Father Tim Grumbach, looking at this, it also stands out to me during Dr. Carrie Gress's book, The Anti-Mary Exposed. She talks about how fairy tales and ultimately stories about princesses are something that's so commonly told in both movies and books today to young girls. And it gives girls not so much the idea of being a princess, but what makes a woman worthy to be a princess. And in our fairy tale stories, they're women who are humble, self-sacrificial toward others, truly loving and virtuous human beings. And it reminds me of the story you just told about the author of the article who saw a woman in Notre Dame who was so moved by her ultimately humility and going to confession, that humility is something that we do not seek after in today's culture. It feels so out of touch. Some women would view it as almost a kind of that doormat type of personality.
Yeah, and that is a part of that anti-Mary spirit, you know, kind of as a counterpart to the Antichrist. And we know scripturally the Antichrist is the one who denies that Jesus has come in the flesh and that the Father has sent his Son in the flesh, born of a woman, born under the law to ransom those who are born under the law. And so the anti-Mary would be turning around and making counterfeit all these beautiful things about who Mary was and what made her beautiful, and her ability to love and her motherhood. So the anti-Mary spirit would also be one that is proud, mm-hmm. one that is you know, forceful.
In control, dominant.
Yes, yes. And so you had mentioned, and Dr. Gress mentions in her book as well, that, you know, there are men in this culture saying, you know, these women are just trying to be men and we don't want to pursue and court ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's a conversation that needs to be had too, especially in a culture that lifts up you know, homosexuality and the you know, the word narcissism is often used. I don't know in a full psychological sense if that's fair, but it's important to see the differences in the sexes as being something really important for marriage, for courting, for falling in love and being able to love, is that when you don't have the complementarity of the sexes, this is a conversation that needs to be had, not yes. an easy one, but when you don't have the complementarity of the sexes, you have two people who are looking at each other as, you know, that's me and I'm loving me in that sense. Is there's no difference in the sexes between those two people.
Yeah, that's not what we read in the origins of the story, right? Of talking about men and women in the gospel. Adam looked at all of creation, looking at the plants and the animals. He's there, he's alone in the garden. And suddenly he's in awe when he recognizes Eve is like me, but different. And I remember Dr. Philip Chavez said it once. He's a regular guest here on Trending, and it stood with me. He said, part of the power between the feminine and the masculine in that attraction is the desire for what is other.
Right. And something that I can't grasp, something I can't possess, but something that is just beautifully and uniquely and different from myself right in front of me. Mm-hmm. I hesitate to bring up Game of Thrones, but it's all the rage right now. There's new episodes coming out. I haven't really watched any Game of Thrones, but honestly, I'm reading the books. And there are a couple characters, you know, without really going into detail.
I can't believe you're reading those books.
I'm curious by the story, and it's a good story, and just flying through it, not lingering in too many places. But that there's a couple of characters. There's an incestuous relationship between brother and sister. Can not going into too many details, but they bring this up, is that you just see yourself in the other, don't you? And that's why you love him, or that's why you love her. And I see that as an anti-Mary spirit of loving another person because you see yourself in them. rather than seeing a unique and unrepeatable person, as St. John Paul II would say in the theology of the body.
Interesting. It's an interesting concept. Do you say seeing yourself or seeing what you want? Like, mm-hmm. that's mine. Like, what is graspable? What is mine? What I can take, what I can grab, what I can have. It is ultimately about you no matter what.
Yeah. 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 And that is the sense that we use the word narcissistic. And not to say that same-sex relationships are the only ones where narcissism creeps in, but that it's set up that way because there's no complementarity of the sexes. But this same kind of narcissism can find its way into any relationship where we don't love in the full kind of love that St. Thomas Aquinas tells us is that love is willing the good of the other as other. And we can will the good of the other person if it's benefit to us. But a true love, a true charity, the kind of charity that St. Paul speaks of in 1 Corinthians 13 is the kind of love that loves for the sake of the other. And the kind of narcissism that creeps into relationships that don't have the complementarity of the sexes, or any relationship where it's about the benefits the person can give rather than the gift giver themselves, it's something that is anti-Mary.
Mm. And something that's being sold to women as yet, you know, we were talking off air earlier about how Cosmo and so many of these different companies are selling sexual liberation, sexual freedom, but ultimately their business is trying to sell a certain type of lifestyle that isn't freedom.
Right. It's being sold to us. It's there's a narrative being sold to us, and recognizing that it does come from, you know, the magazine giants like Cosmo, who were really just trying to give at the time a female version of Playboy. Mm-hmm. They were taking the methods of Hugh Hefner and
exactly. They were mentored by Hugh Hefner.
Right. And creating stories, making stories up, presenting them as if these are real women, while creating a type of woman for the sake of business, for the sake of selling magazines. And this is what we've bought. This is what we've fed on. This is what we think has nourished us, but really it's left us hungry for, you know, true femininity.
And I think that's something that is powerfully shown and made accessible in Dr. Carrie Gress's Toxic Femininity is the issue that's being addressed in her book, The Anti-Mary Exposed. Be sure to head over to radiotrending.com to hear the interview with Dr. Carrie Gress as we discuss her latest book and really helping regain a sense of the femininity within our culture.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Timory, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We have two opposing worldviews, one where we seek after a career, power, education, and we're grasping for power in our world to the point where fertility is plummeting. We have most women on average say that they had at least one or two fewer children than they would have wanted. We see stats like that that were coming out of places like Hungary until they changed their family policy and changed their culture the last 10 years. But you see this in Italy, Denmark, all across Europe, and here in the United States. Father Tim, you know, we contrast this with the Anti-Mary Exposed written by Dr. Carrie Gress and just the calling of women to look at Our Lady as such a virtuous model. How do we get this back?
Well, looking at Our Lady as someone who gives herself away, and that's where her true power comes from, is that, you know, scripturally and how we understand her just in prayer also, is that she's not a woman grasping for power. But she's a woman who bears the power that she has with her authority as a mother by giving it away. Mm-hmm. You know, we can look at the wedding feast of Cana, and she tells the waiters to, you know, do whatever he tells you. Instead of saying, oh, I'm going to fix this, she gives her authority away to her son, who can ultimately fix it. And it's her love. And, you know, we've seen she's so beautiful because she loves. Mm-hmm. And she's so powerful in her love because she gives herself away. And so if we keep that image of Mary as not as just this ideal woman that no woman on this earth can reach, that she's just perfectly safe and up in heaven, but we remember some really beautiful images of her as she comes back to her children in the great Marian apparitions, that, you know, sometimes she's weeping. Yes, we're promised that there'll be no more tears in heaven, but she loves so powerfully that she's still weeping for her children here on earth. And that tells us something beautiful about what it means to be a saint, is that we don't get up to heaven and we're just suddenly safe and away from the travails of those who are still suffering on this earth, but we still, you know, our love is actually deepened. So let's look to the love of Mary and see that in her sinlessness, it was that never that she was without pain, but she was even more vulnerable because of the deep ways that she loved and gave herself away.
Last week on the show, you and I talked about living in the state of grace, and we talked about how grace is a complete gift, something that we cannot merit, but it is a total gift given to God. And if you think about it, Hail Mary, full of grace, is the greeting that the angel Gabriel has to Our Lady. Everything Our Lady has been overwhelmingly bestowed upon her. And I think about why it's because of this that when she's at the cross watching her son die, and in his final words, he turns to Our Lady and says, "Woman, behold your son. Son, behold your mother." He is calling her to continue to give everything. And if we think about it, she doesn't have to mother us. She doesn't have to give anything to us. Yet she does. And I think about how mothers are just drained in how much they give, but God equips them for what they give.
Yes, and just the angel's greeting. I love Gabriel's greeting. In the Greek, it's so beautiful. Kyrie kakaratomene. You can almost sing it. And I like to imagine Gabriel, just from the moment he was created, you know, so beautifully as an angel to stand in the presence of God, kind of imagining, waiting for this moment in which he could greet Mary and bring her the news of the Redeemer, that God himself wanted to become one of us. You know, in a lighthearted way, I was sharing this with our eighth graders yesterday during their retreat. Can you imagine, like, the angel Gabriel standing in front of a mirror, like, trying to figure out, am I going to whisper this to her? Am I going to, like, sing it to her? But in reality, the joy that must have been on Gabriel's heart when he made that pronouncement, giving Mary her new name. Mm-hmm. You know, Kakaritomene is a name that Mary has been given from God because she's found this favor with God.
Grace.
And, yeah, right at the heart of it is that word grace, you know, Kyrie, which is a gift. You know, in the New Testament times, the understanding of that Greek word was gift. And so we can't give what we haven't first received. Mm-hmm. And we haven't done anything to earn God's love. So in our prayer, we've got to see our prayer as gift. I mean, this is how we're going to become like Mary. We recognize our prayer time not as something we give to God, but something he gives to us. Mm-hmm. We recognize our charity, our acts of charity, not as something we give to somebody, but as something we receive from God. You know, this opportunity to love as we are called to love, that's something we receive. We don't just give it. And so we give away what we've received. That's how we're going to become more like Mary.
Mm. And you look at the words continuing in the story of the Annunciation after she hears this greeting and she's in awe. How is this going to be to me? Because she was planning to be a temple virgin,
right?
And she was already dedicated from a very young age, left to be raised in the temple. And it was more so that Saint Joseph took legal responsibility for her, because that was what was done in the society at the time, that the responsibility for women was taken on upon men if the parent was, specifically the father, was no longer present. And so then when she acquiesces, responds to it, she says that, you know, in the Latin, I love the Latin words. We're going all Greek and Latin, Hebrew on you. Fiat mihi, secundum
right.
Verbum tuum. Be it done unto me according to thy word.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the great fiat, where it's not so much a word that is just a yes, just a surrendering, but it's a creative word. Because in the Latin, also in the translation of the Old Testament, the very first moments where God creates light, it's fiat lux, let there be light. Mm. And so Mary shares in this creative speech of God when she says, you know, fiat to the angel Gabriel. She's saying the same word that God said when he created light.
Well, isn't that neat? Because it's only through creating new human life, through the conception of life in sexual intimacy. And this is what's so powerful about Our Lady, is she didn't engage in sexual intimacy, mm-hmm. but she still is involved in creating. It's the only time where we ever co-create. Every other time, God creates.
Yeah, and our words can be creative in a way,
yes.
if it shares in God's creativity. I was just, again, with our eighth graders yesterday, on their retreat, and we actually played a game of the Box of Lies. I don't know if you've ever seen Jimmy Fallon in the Box of
No.
Lies. Oh, it's such a fun game to watch. But you know, you have a bunch of boxes set up, mystery boxes. You don't know what's in them. And you have two people who are separated by a screen of sorts. and one person opens the box and it's something really bizarre and they're supposed to describe it or lie about it. And the other person doesn't have to determine what it is, but they have to determine whether or not the person is telling the truth or lying. And so I played this game with our eighth graders and kind of see, you know, how creative they could get in telling the truth or lying. And ultimately the moral was, you can tell these lies, but it's not going to make what's not true into truth. Mm-hmm. And so our words are so powerful because our truth can help create things, mm-hmm. but our lies can't create anything. Mm-hmm. And so when our speech comes in line with God's powerful speech that creates, where, you know, his word touches nothingness and being unfolds, you know, like Mary's fiat coming into line with God's own fiat, things get quite creative in our lives.
Mm-hmm. I think about, too, Our Lady, especially reading the book, The Anti-Mary Exposed, which you and I have talked about earlier in the show, and also we had Dr. Carrie Gress come on for an interview here on Trending. You can find the episode at radiotrending.com if you just look back a few episodes. But what I always think stands out is I ended up taking a note, like, of all the virtues that Dr. Gress mentions that Our Lady exemplifies. And one virtue that has for years stood out in Our Lady, that she's gentle. Mm. And especially because I think we live in a time where women have become so harsh, so nitpicky, so controversial, so intense, that all of us need to learn, especially as women, what does it mean to be gentle? And I'm not saying to you be a pushover, a doormat, but how do we engage in gentleness in our speech, gentleness in what we choose to share, right? And how we interact.
Right. And the beauty of the gentleness of our mother. And I've kind of been seeing her not as having a lack of gentleness, but in that gentleness, kind of a fierce gentleness in a way.
Right. She is fierce.
This fierce motherly love. That her gentleness comes from the reality that she knows she is loved.
Yeah.
And she knows how to share that love with which she has received. Yeah, one of the major points in Dr. Gress's book is that women have felt like they've needed to become like men, mm-hmm. in order to succeed in this world. And so I've been taking on this, you know, kind of distorted version of men's aggressiveness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a perspective that I really needed to read about, and, you know, that I haven't experienced in myself, of course, being a man, is that, you know, a lot of restlessness in the woman's heart, especially in community, of demanding an equality, that when another woman will be trying to come up in the hierarchy of sorts, that it's time to bring her down. And so this was something that was admitted by Dr. Gress, and that is not a part of the virtues of Mary.
Yeah, just to clarify, getting a little deeper into that, because yeah. That kind of touches that women, you know, are grasping for this power, but once they start to, other women have to tear that down, because when we get into that level of aggression and power seeking, it's destructive mm-hmm. in oneself, but destructive toward other women. Mm-hmm. And it's something we don't allow to happen. I want to come back for a second to this fierceness of Our Lady that you talk about, because I think there's something really special about that. When we are passionate about something, that drives us to greater love. Mm-hmm. And I think about that in when we were talking earlier about how the happiest wives are religious women. That's because there's a passion of love for the human being, but also the responsibility for that human being that comes from God. Mm-hmm. And that responsibility and gift given to us drives us in greater passion.
Yeah. And isn't that just what terrifies the demons when it comes to Mary? And, you know, we hear time and time again from the exorcists that the demons are terrified of Mary because of her gentleness, but because of her fierce love, because of her knowing she is loved and being able to share that and give herself away. This is terrifying to the demons, who grasp only for power.
That's Father Tim Grumbach. You can find him at radiotrending.com. Head over to the guest page. He has dozens upon dozens of episodes where he joins us here on Trending, talking about living in a state of grace, a faith-filled life, and taking on some tough moral issues. Where else can people find you on social media?
You can find me at Father Tim Grumbach on Twitter and on Instagram. No longer Father Daddy Wop, just plain old Father Tim Grumbach.
So be sure to go follow him. And if you've enjoyed the show, head over to radiotrending.com, catch another episode, and text your favorite one to your friends and be a part of the new evangelization.
This has been Trending with Timmery. To book her to speak or learn more about her guests, visit radiotrending.com. That's radiotrending.com. You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes.